The poet motion says, in the beginning was a word, right? So in the beginning was the word. That allowed me to be a storyteller. And then along came Dr. Milton Phillips, and he said, write it down. And I must be mindful of Dr. Milton Phillips when he says, write it down, that I am supposed to take that instruction and say to the next young person that I meet, do something. And then we did that, and then someone came along and said, hey, you know what, you could tell a good story, so why don't you become a host and an MC? And boom, 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 again, your sector of the word, of language, is expanded. In some circles and in some in areas of class, people are allowed to do multiple things because they're privileged, they have opportunity, they've got time, but more or less, they have opportunity and they have been exposed. For people who are often racialized, who have the ability because they have gifts and they can and execute things, there's a word that comes into the language called ambitious and ambition. And that is a marginalized word.
And so, Ms. Sidhu, on that note of ambition, we want to thank you for the work that you've done in the past two decades, and we hope that many of our listeners and many of the people who've frequented the bookstore will come on down next week, next Saturday at Cecil Street from 6:30 to 12 p.m. to celebrate two decades of A Different Book List. We want to thank you.
I thank you so much, Tando, and I thank you for letting your listeners know to come and celebrate the power of words, because they, too, are in the sector and circle of words. Enough respect to African women and family.
You're most welcome. Do take care now, and we'll see you same time, same place next week. This is the African Woman and Family. Bye now.
Right here, right now, every day. CIUT 89.5, Toronto. Sound of your city.
Ani Bojo, Tanse, Sego, Wache, and Hello. Indigenous Waves is a celebration of Indigenous cultures, locally, nationally, and globally. Through music, storytelling, interviews, panel discussions, art, and humor, we explore the diversity of Indigenous peoples. Indigenous Waves can be heard here on CIUT every Monday from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can always catch our podcasts at indigenouswaves.com. Follow us on Twitter at Indigenous Waves to stay up to date with Indigenous Waves here on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Evidence on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Samara Thompson.
And I'm Agujata Novatska here.
Well, we have a really interesting and diverse show for you. A little bit later, we'll be on the phone in Calgary with Denise Fujiwara, the Artistic Director of Fujiwara Inventions, on her presentation of Inawa, taking place at Harbourfront Center Theatre, and currently she's on tour and performing in Calgary this evening. We'll also be talking to the always interesting Sashar Zarif, Artistic Director of Sashar Zarif Dance Theatre, and he's here to talk about the world premiere of Oyen Awakening, Creating Living Steps Out of Ancient Echoes, showing October 24th and 25th at the Aga Khan Museum. And joining us in the studio now is dancer El Toro and artistic director of Love Letters Cabaret, Pastel Supernova. Pastel Supernova has appeared on David Letterman and toured with Nelly Furtado. She has a mix of contemporary Martha Graham technique, Latin roots, Fosse, and cabaret influences, all to bring together a very interesting burlesque style. As I said, she's artistic director of Love Letters, and she's here to talk about their upcoming show. Good afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Hey.
Our pleasure. Before we talk about your show, Pastel, how would you describe or define burlesque dance? Because I think it's a term often misused.
I think it's a big umbrella. It's like saying the word dance, and under it there are many different styles and categories. But essentially, it's the art of tease, striptease. And it is used in Love Letters as one of the many facets that we use to tell the story, but we're not necessarily a burlesque company. I'd say we're like a dance theater company that creates very sexy ballets.
I would tend to agree.
So how did that come about? How did you decide to structure it like that? Because it doesn't seem very conventional. I didn't intend to. The first show I created, people started just saying that it was very sexy. I do have a lot of tease. I love everything sensual. And the first show I made was a series of love letters through movement for me. So it was very sexy, but the intention was just to show my love for somebody. And then it turned out that that's how I choreograph. I really love relationships and showing them through movement, I guess, is a little bit more seductive than most people are used to seeing.
How do you find working in a piece, El Toro, that is so seductive?
I love it. It's very much one of my home styles. I started performing burlesque before joining the company and was also a dancer, and it kind of melded together something that really worked with what Pastel was doing. And so I think it's amazing to play with sensuality and play with the body and the idea of transformation and revealing different layers and the meanings that it can bring to something, and especially doing so in a group setting with like really intense dance. You get corporeal, you get a visceral connection with the audience, which is really what, I mean, outside of in my own work as well, is what I strive for, is this visceral connection to what's happening on stage. And it's just a very great way to open it up. People become very comfortable when you're willing to expose yourself.
Now, your audiences are a little bit more interactive and a little bit closer. I mean, that fourth wall has far more holes in it than I think perhaps a standard theater show would. Yes. How do you do that and why?
I do it because I want the audience for the length of the show to feel free, to not worry about whether they feel uncomfortable or happy or sexy or need to. I really love what is primal. So I think you need to break the fourth wall and treat the audience the way you treat your cast members in order for them to feel included and then be able to release that energy, whatever the energy is. And it's usually a little bit of protection. And so once they feel free enough to just let loose, we have a real communion. And we do that by working a lot, training a lot with improvisation and contact improv and learning how to read people so that when we go up to audiences, we have interactive tickets and those are the people we play with the most. We can go up to them gently and then vibe it out. And usually, most of the time, they want to get up and dance and be part of the whole show. If they don't want to, it's very easy to read. But we then sit with them and play with them as well.
Now, when you say play with them. Yeah, I was about to ask anything. That could mean anything.
It can mean anything, and it really depends on the show. Sometimes I can be under the table untying your shoes. Sometimes somebody might be purring behind your ear. Sometimes it might just be us sitting down with you having a drink while the show is going on. It can go anywhere. Sometimes we're dancing on the table, smashing glasses and shooting water everywhere. We call it the splash zone.
Yeah.
I have a kid. A splash zone that's not what I usually think of.
That's what happens.
So did you ever have an audience member react in a way that you didn't expect in this scenario, or are you really good at always figuring that out before you engage in splashing or playing?
We have been really lucky, and everybody has really loved it. But I think it's because the moment they walk in, the setting is already created. The characters are already in play. You enter the whole environment as the show is set. To be. So if you're walking into a holiday show, you're amongst dolls right away. This Bacchanal show, it's a mythical magic forest, so all these supernatural creatures, maenads and nymphs, will be roaming through the restaurant already. So I feel you're already prepared, a little lubricated for what's going to happen.
The show Bacchanal, where did you get the title from?
The Bacchanal is a real thing. It's real. It's an ancient ritual, basically, that these mainly female creatures would get together in forests to celebrate the god Bacchus or Dionysus, who's the god of wine and reverie, and they would have like an ancient rave, basically, and get intoxicated and have wild sex and
sacrifice things
like men, like Toro.
Exactly.
So just mention, you know, just saying that's what happens.
It's true.
So theoretically, so with your character that you have, because you do have your performance place that you're in, how much of it is you? How much of it do you leave behind? How much of it goes on stage? Does it morph? Do you know what I mean? Do you know the question?
I think I like to keep it all inside and let it come out as it wants to. I don't really try to censor anything. I think the only difference between me and stage persona me is I do the admin work and she has all the fun. Toro, how about you?
Yeah, there's varying degrees to it for me. I mean, I do a lot of different performance styles, and to a different extent, they keep blending into each other, but there's something in, I almost treat eyeliner like a clown nose. So the idea that, like, once Toro is on stage, it's a heightened self. It's all still me. It's all still in me, no matter what performance we do. That's always the case. But especially with these shows, it's a very heightened primal version of who I am and how I move, and adapting to characters and whatnot, but especially in this show, it's very much like I am a man walking into the space and being immersed into this experience. It's this heightened naivete that then goes into what happens in the Bacchus, in the Bacchanal.
It's interesting timing for the Bacchanal right around Halloween, because mm-hmm. the show's a couple days before. How did you research it?
I've always been into mythology, especially Greek mythology, since I can remember. I've been reading about Dionysus and Aphrodite and the whole pantheon, and all of my work is usually goddess worship. So if I'm doing burlesque, all of my solos go back to a specific goddess that I want to share and tell her story. And this one, Bacchus Dionysus, I enjoy him. He's the only kind of man I've honored, and that's because he works with women mainly, and he's also the god of madness, and he's really mischievous and like a child spirit with a really giant erection. I'm interested.
So you touched on this earlier, that there are VIP tickets for an interactive experience.
Got you. This is how my mind works.
Well, it's a one way to do a segue.
There we go.
Can you tell us a bit about, again, you said it's more interactive. Not everybody in the audience gets the interactive experience.
This is true. Mm-hmm. So for the interactive experience, generally it means that you will be placed. You're guaranteed a table, so you're a little bit more comfortable and you can sit. You have better sight lines, obviously. But also a lot of the choreography is site-specific. So the more VIPs we get, the more we spread down into the audience. And so the choreography will go in between tables. So as much as we will play, and certain characters are set to play. So I play Pan, which is a very interactive character. It communicates with those VIP seatings. But also the dances are set to be right in between tables, so you'll look around and be in the dance on the stage without having ever gotten up. You can still be eating your dinner and enjoying the show, but you'll have a completely different point of view.
How long is the show?
90 minutes.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
Is it good for children?
You know, I've performed burlesque in Europe and cabaret theaters. I've seen children there. It's not a problem. Here, you know, with drinking restrictions, I'd say this is not a family show, but I only say that because we're in Canada. I think theater is theater, and it's great for everyone. We do get sexy, but it is very much like I am a contemporary dancer from my roots, so I just think it's beautiful more than anything. And if you have children that you talk about theater with, I don't think it would be a problem, but mm-hmm. We live in Canada.
How do we get tickets?
You can get tickets online at loveletters.com/tickets. We have a link on Eventbrite. If you know any of us, we're always around with tickets, but mainly loveletters.com.
And you can get the VIP tickets that way as well?
Absolutely.
I'm intrigued. Mal?
Yes.
It sounds amazing.
Can you just talk before we go a tiny bit about your creation process in terms of the actual things that happen? What kind of things do you do to create your characters, to create the movement that are maybe slightly different than what the contemporary world would be familiar with in terms of dance? Is there a difference?
I start with a story, and I don't even know if it's very different from the contemporary world. I think I've been in contemporary companies where individuality is honored and it's sought out, and I think it's the same approach in Love Letters. Tara, what's your experience?
I'd say, I mean, it definitely feeds into the world of sort of collective creation and building together. I mean, Pastel comes in with this vision and this eye, with her eye and this choreography that we're doing, but we also come in and we experiment. We, you know, we do series of improvisations, whether just to work with each other and develop relationships and also develop new bits of choreo. I know in the past we've done this show and a different dance that I ended up doing, there was moments where the choreo could adjust because me playing that character meant a different thing than somebody else playing that character. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden it evolves into something else. So it's really being akin and being sensitive to the fact that it's going to be different with any of us performing it, especially when it comes to bringing in these different characters. There's different, it's almost for some people a dual level of of character development, right? You've got your burlesque persona in a sense, or this other character that you've built, and then on top of that they're playing this specific character in this show. So I mean, it's inherently, it has to adapt and work with one another, and so developing is, yeah, I'd say very akin to a lot of the work that I've done with collective creation companies, and the idea of improving to find content or to redevelop content and discover characters through really doing it. There's no other way than for us to feel each other's bodies and roll around and find out who meshes with who. Does this character actually like this one, or is this one gonna, you know, I'm gonna stay away from that person for the rest of the show? Like,
I always ask the characters before a show, know who you would die for, who would you kill first, who do you love, and who loves you. And depending on the cast, on the like burlesque personas, they will have different answers for different ensemble members. So that really affects the choreography. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Especially the killing. No, I'm kidding.
There's always a point.
There's always a murder.
We're unfortunately out of time. I wish we had more. I have a lot more questions I would love to ask, but perhaps checking out the show will answer some of my questions. So
absolutely.
For those listeners that are interested, the show is running Love Letters Cabaret, The Bacchanal, showing October 29th at Lula Lounge. And the early show is at 6, the late show at 9. For more information, go to loveletters.pastelsupernova.com. We've been speaking with El Toro, a dancer, and the artistic director of Love Letters Cabaret, Pastel Supernova. Thank you for coming in this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
I'm Samara Thompson.
And I'm Agujata Novatska.
You've been listening to Evidance on CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a short break and be right back with Denise Fujiwara.
I put a spell on you. Because you're mine. Stop the things you do. What's up? I lied. Yeah, I taste bad. Woo! No running around. I taste bad. No putting me down. I put a spell on you.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to EveryDance on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Samara Thompson.
And I'm Małgorzata Nowacka.
You're listening to EveryDance 1 hour earlier this week because we're about to get a live broadcast from, I believe it's Steve's Music, in a little bit. So we have been bumped an hour earlier, and we're so glad that you're listening with us.
Yes, and we're really excited to introduce the next guest.
Our next guest is choreographer Denise Fujiwara, the artistic director of Fujiwara Inventions, and she's here to talk about her presentation of Inawa, taking place at Harborfront Center Theater, November 4th to 8th, and she's joining us on the phone from Calgary. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. Denise, before we talk about the piece itself, can you give us your background and what led you to starting your company?
Oh, starting the company.
Well, sort of your beginnings in dance, and then what led you to the point where you started your own company.
Oh, okay. Well, way, way, way back as a child, I was an athlete. And I competed on the Canadian Rhythmic Gymnastic Team. And towards the end of my training and career as an athlete, I realized that the part that I liked the best about gymnastics was the dance part, and I thought that, well, if I was going to spend all of this energy and time and commitment to a practice, it really should be able to say something, and something more than, you know, I'm the best, I can get my leg high, I can land on a perfect landing, that kind of thing. And then I discovered contemporary dance. Well, at that time, I suppose it was modern dance that I discovered, and I realized I could do that. And it had always, since childhood, been an ambition to be an artist. I was really crushed when I realized I couldn't draw very well, and I didn't realize that, oh, you could be a dance artist. And so all of those things came together, and I started training as a dancer, and I eventually went to York and did a degree, a fine arts degree. And at the end of my time at York University, I found a group of people that were really creative, and we formed a company called Toronto Independent Dance Enterprise, and I was still in my last year at York. And that was a company that was a really kind of a hothouse, a creative hothouse for a number of us. And we worked for 10 years before I started my solo company. And then I worked as a soloist, and I toured all over the world with solo repertoire for about 15 years before I returned to ensemble choreography. And Unoya is one of the products of the ensemble choreography, my interest in ensemble choreography.
Now, Inoya is based on a poem by Christian Bach. How did you find the poem, and what inspired you about it?
Well, it's quite a famous poem if you're interested in literature, because it won the Griffin Poetry Prize a number of years ago. And it's a very unusual poem. It's a conceptual poem. And it became a bestseller in Canada as well as in the UK, which is very unusual for a book of conceptual poetry. But my husband brought it home. We'd heard about it, and he brought it home, and we read it and enjoyed it, and then, you know, put it away. And about 6 years ago, I was thinking that I would really like to do something with a lot of text, and to use the text as a kind of score for a dance, in the way that many choreographers use music as a score. And I wasn't sure quite how to do it. I really wasn't sure how to adapt Christian's poetry to it, but it was a challenge, and I started. And then 5 years later, we ended up with a full evening work.
So you said his poetry sounds sort of has some of the same kind of concepts as dance. How so?
Well, it doesn't have the same concepts as dance. It is a conceptual poem. So, and the concept that that his poem is based on is that it's a lipogram. That means it eliminates letters in the poetry. So, for example, this is the first line of one of the poems. Enfettered, these sentences repress free speech. The text deletes selected letters. So in that sentence, he gives us the thesis of the poem. And you'll notice that that sentence contained only, the only vowel it contains is E. And so he's written a book in five chapters, and each chapter features only one vowel.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of a feat. And he does it, and he creates coherent, challenging, interesting, fascinating, funny poetry in five chapters. And so that is the foundation for the work that we've done.
So do you translate that into dance by censoring certain things, like no using elbows or no breathing?
Yeah, that's one of the things we do. We in chapter A we constrain ourselves to using only to initiating movement from body parts that only have A's in them, which really limits you, really, really limits you. And so and the same thing in chapter E, chapter I, the same thing. So it really limits the kind of vocabulary that you can create, and it creates a kind of idiosyncratic movement vocabulary for each chapter.
So when you created this movement that was limited by the body parts and the letters, did you create it? Did you have your dancers create it?
Yes, we created it collaboratively. So I would give them assignments. I'd give them, you know, a list of body parts and other constraints to simultaneously work with to create the movement vocabulary. And each dancer has different movement vocabulary.
Huh. And they're all equally, and they're all restrained by the same pattern in each section.
Yes, but they have, but they each treat it slightly differently. So yes, so it's kind of a complex piece, and it has, so you know every single thing in the dance, in the performance is there for a reason. So there's no sort of generalized movement in the piece. And all the props, all the costumes, every bit of the music is there for a particular reason that relates to the constraints.
How does the music relate?
Well, for example, the simplest idea is that he used instrumentation that was all vowel-specific for each chapter. The poet constrained himself to five vowels, and Phil Strong, the composer, constrained himself to using one black note on the piano keyboard per chapter, and that gives each chapter a different tonal quality. So, and then there's the thing that Phil Strong is also very smart and wickedly funny, and so he does all of those things with a great deal of consideration and humor.
And how does the video design incorporate as well?
Well, I constrained the videographer to using typographical animation. So there are he didn't use any imagery, just the words of the poems. I find that when you look at the poems in the written form, they're kind of spectacular. You can't believe that, wow, there really are only A's in this whole chapter. And so he puts that on the screen in many, many wonderful and inventive ways.
So you're showing the text of the that's inspired the dance of that particular chapter?
Not all of it. It's really just particular poems are done in video. Some of the poems are done, most of the poems are done with the dancer speaking them live.
And when you're
Because a lot of what we're discussing here are restrictions. So is the resulting work, does it have a sense of it coming inwards on itself almost? Because that restriction always implies that.
Yes, that's a good point. And we just did it in St. John's, Newfoundland, and one of the critics there said she, after, you know, reading what the piece was about and how we approached it, she expected something quite minimalist. And the presenter in Halifax told me that he, after, you know, hearing about the piece, he expected something quite dry and academic. But in fact, what we have arrived at is something that's many layered, rich visually, orally, acoustically, visually. And it's full of wit and humor. And so the references, we put all these constrained references in there. But really what you're going to see is really interesting choreography, great dancing, amazing poetry, really interesting, funny musical references, and the whole thing comes together in a kind of unusual way. It actually surprised us how beautifully it came together into something that is incredibly layered and rich and beautiful. I know it's hard to imagine.
It is hard to imagine.
Yeah. The whole thing is, in a way, it's like a kind of a game, because it's based on wordplay, visual play, choreographic play, and we use the poem as a jumping off point. It's, you know, it's a foundation,
right.
And it's a fantastic foundation because it's so well written. You can appreciate the work just on the level of the literature, but then we're bouncing off the literature in many directions with all of the other media.
One of the things that I'm finding really intriguing, because as a choreographer myself, I really believe that every motion that happens on a stage, every bit of choreography should be there for a reason.
Exactly.
And it sounds
very
like
few people do that.
Well, it creates a whole that's it's so wholesome.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like you've gone so in such detail to the music, to the video, and all of it. How long did it take you to be that thorough, to involve that many people, to get it to that level of true essence of the original poem?
Well, it took us, we didn't work on it full time, but we worked on it for 5 years.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
That is a long process.
Yes, but, you know, we worked on it really spottily. We worked on it for 3 weeks, and then we take, you know, and then we'd all go away and do other projects for half a year, and then we'd come back for another 2 weeks, and then we'd come back in 3 months. And, you know, so it was very spotty, but I really needed that time, because in between times, I was doing research and, you know, thinking up experiments and it took us a long time also to let the training take its effect. So, you know, over that period, we did about 3 years of voice training for all the dancers. We trained in Buteau.
What waist training did you say?
Voice.
Okay, I thought you said waist.
No, voice training, and and all you know, all kinds of things like that. And it took a long time to really assimilate all of that work and to be able to say the poems by memory and all of that.
Yeah. Well, sadly, we are running out of time, but this is fascinating, and thank you for coming on.
Okay,
air.
Can I just mention that,
yes.
You know, it does sound a little implausible even, but the thing was nominated for 3 Door Awards, and Now Magazine named it in its top 5 dances of the year. So, and we're on tour, you know, so...
So it's not to be missed.
Yeah.
So if you want to catch it, because as we said, it's not to be missed, Inaua is taking place at Harbourfront Centre Theatre November 4th to 7th, or pardon me, 4th to 8th. For more information, you can go onto the Harbourfront website, www.harbourfrontcentre.com. We've been speaking with choreographer Denise Fujiwara, the artistic director of Fujiwara Inventions. It has been a pleasure to speak with you this afternoon.
Thank you.
Have fun in Calgary and on the rest of your tour.
Thanks a lot.
And we'll see you in Toronto in a few weeks.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye. You've been listening to Evie Dance on CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a short break and be back with Sashar Zarif. Good afternoon and welcome back to Evie Dance on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Samara Thompson.
And I'm Małgorzata Nowacka.
As you've already probably discovered, you're listening to us 1 hour earlier because they're doing a live broadcast at 2 o'clock, our regular time slot. And joining us on the phone now is Sashar Zarif, the artistic director of Sashar Zarif Dance Theatre. And he's here to talk about the world premiere of Oyen, Awakening, Creating Living Steps Out of Ancient Echoes, showing October 24th and 25th at the Aga Khan Museum. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi. Can you tell us what the movement vocabulary that you work with is based in?
I would like to thank you first for giving me this opportunity.
Our pleasure.
To be part of your program. The movement vocabulary I'm using is part of this ongoing research project that I have called Dance of Mugam. The movements are coming from calligraphy, ancient Sufi ritualistic movements, and also some traditional movements from Central and Western Asia. The movements are used very freely to kind of accommodate the performer to experience the moment based on the content of the work. The challenge here is to try to not to perform. But to really experience that moment that you are working with in the piece.
So I think part of the intrigue that has to do with your work is that it's hard to imagine what it is, because you're talking about ancient calligraphy and ancient movement, and we don't know what that is.
Yes. Well, you know, the mystics in the East, the Sufis or dervishes, they used three art forms in order to practice their beliefs and to accommodate their self-growth. They used the thoughts or their beliefs in the format of a poetry that has a lot of metaphors involved, and it has a very sophisticated rhythmical structure. And also they took this thoughts and emotions. emotionalize it through music, the modal music, the classical music of that area. And to practice, to really bring it to action, they used movements. There is traces of that still in many of the dance and music rituals, sometimes referred to as sama, of Sufis. And what it is movements that have a lot of psychological connection to the person that is moving it, moving that part of the body. For example, the shoulders are generally referred to as the place that handles your ego, your self-confidence, your belief, and there's another part to this equation that in Sufism mainly you're encouraged not to believe but to keep inquiring and wondering and keep that part of yourself vital and life alive. So these movements have come together in over many thousands of years, and people have been using them in the ritual to kind of deal with their own personal issues, their communal bondings, and other occasions like rite of passage. And so the movements are, it's very hard to explain. I can show it to you. it is a very integrated form of art. I'm working with, last time I worked with Alim Kasimov. He's a master singer of Mugam music, which employs the traditional Sufi poetry and the traditional form of modal music to emotionalize that. So I worked with him in order to bring the dance element back into this ensemble. And this was on stage in 2012, and it took about 8 years of work. And after that, I wanted to use that movement vocabulary in a more contemporary format. So I came across a composer called Farangiz Alizadeh. She is an amazing composer that does the 20th century classical or contemporary composition of music, but it has a very deep connection to her roots, which is Azerbaijani Mugam. As she mentioned once, she said, "I would go to conservatory and play Bach and Beethoven and Karakayev, and on the way home I would hear the Azan, which is based on the Mughal music by Bayat Shiraz." And so she said it was inevitable to take that part of myself away from this classical music. So I was very fascinated to know how she brings these two parts of herself into her work so beautifully. Most of her compositions have been played by Yo-Yo Ma and Grenesse Quartet, and she's a very active collaborator of the Silk Road Project with Yo-Yo Ma. So I went and inquired, and I took a 10-minute piece that she has composed for a cello composition competition in Paris. The piece called Oyan means awakening, and I studied that piece. I researched that piece to understand how I can feel the traditional element, but I cannot point at them. This took a bit of work with her, and then when I understood the traditional elements and how they got in there, I wanted to deconstruct and bring them out, highlight them. So I brought a fiddle player of Mugam, Elnur Mikhailov, and a singer of Mugham, Milana Milanamov. These two are now the rising star of Mugham, and very talented, actually. I'm just after you, I'm going to go to the airport and pick them up. So they have helped me to reconstruct those traditional elements and bring them back. So the work is the work on stage is really a summary of all this research that I've done. By no means is a statement. It's just as much as is possible an honest reflection of the process that we have all gone through making this piece. Part of this event is also a documentary film by Elçin Musaoğlu, based on this work that I've done. It will be part of the evening that day.
Now, as you are creating the movement for this and all your research, is the choreography itself trying to keep with the ancient aesthetics and movement qualities, or do you bring any contemporary movement into it?
Well, I've been working with Elizabeth Langley as a dramaturg or creative facilitator on this work, and the reason has been that is exactly that. How do I negotiate? I would like to stand on my roots and grow taller. I don't want to stay in my roots, but I would like to be connected to them and let me feed myself to grow more. So I do research in order to move forward. So by no means these are a reconstruction of ancient traditions. It's just inspired. It's informed by them. So I use those elements in order to negotiate my own identity, which is an ongoing process, and which I believe identity is a process, it's not a product. So I do have the movement vocabulary very open. I try to be as generous as I can with it and not to hold on to the form that it is. I do honor the tradition, but also I'm quite aware and committed to looking forward and by digging deeper.
Now, before we run out of time, how can we get tickets?
Aga Khan Museum, it's presented by Aga Khan Museum, the work, and they have a wonderful venue. The museum is beautiful. The work is on Saturday night mentioned before, and Sunday matinee. Sunday matinee will also give you an opportunity to visit the beautiful museum that they have. You can buy the tickets from the Aga Khan website. Also, if you go to my own website, www.sashardance.com, you will be able to find a link right at the front of the page. It says purchase tickets, and it directs you to Aga Khan Museum website.
Which I hear is a beautiful site as well. So
it is gorgeous, yes. We are very excited.
You must be one of the earliest performances to come in there, so that's really quite exciting.
And then also the great Farangis Alizadeh, the composer and pianist, will also be there and might surprise us with the performance.
That's amazing. And you also have a filmmaker showing a piece as well.
Yes, Elçin Musaoğlu will premiere. The film is world premiere, and then the work, the whole thing, the whole evening is being premiered in Toronto. I usually do that. I bring it home first.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming to speak with us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
So again,
it's a great pleasure.
Pleasure is ours, as always. We've been speaking to Sashar Zarif, Artistic Director of Sashar Zarif Dance Theater, and he was talking about the world premiere of Oyen, Awakening, Creating Living Steps Out of Ancient Echoes, happening October 24th at 8 p.m. and October 25th at 2 p.m. at the Aga Khan Museum. For more information, check out sashardance.com or the Aga Khan site as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great, and you can hear this webcast, or rather this show as a webcast, on evidanceradio.com, and it's evidanceradio.com. You can go back and listen to other shows as well.
And we'd like to thank our earlier guests from today. We had Pastel Supernova, and who's the artistic director of Love Letters Cabaret, and her dancer El Toro, talking about the presentation of Bacchanal, showing October 29th at Lula Lounge. Early show is at 6, late show at 9 p.m. For more information, go to www.loveletters.pastelsupernova.com. We also had this pleasure of speaking with choreographer Denise Fujiwara, artistic director of Fujiwara Inventions, on her presentation of Inoue, taking place at Harborfront Center Theater November 4th to 8th. For more information, check out the Harborfront Center box office.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Samara.
I'm Samara Thompson.
Yes, and I'm Angrita Navaska. I would like to thank our wonderful tech,
Shurav Sarkar. Thank you for checking for us. I'm sorry if I got that wrong, but I'm trying.
It's been months. Sorry, Shurav.
You've been listening to Evidance on CIUT 89.5 FM. Have a great Saturday.